Inner Voice, a heartfelt chat with Dr. Fujian.
Well, hello everyone, Dr. Fujian Zhang, and hello to Sean in studio, and a big hello to all of you. This is a show about what matters most in our life, our mind, thoughts, feelings, actions, relationships, and our fulfillment, this beautiful journey of life. In this show, I'll share with you the tip of the week about how being emotionally and cognitively healthy is so important in our lives. Now, we'll talk about how to maintain your anxiety in the asking segment. I will share the latest research about neuroscientists showing that the entire auditory pathway represents sounds according to prior expectations. And then I'll bring you Dr. Robert Johansson, co-founder and co-author of the Need Management Theory, a theory about love, intimacy, and relationships. I'd love to hear from you, so connect with me through my website, fujian.com, and follow my social media and message me with the comments with the topics of your interest so I can talk to you about them. But first, this is the tip of the week. I've observed denial, perceiving the truth differently, manipulating, attacking, justifying, and so forth, all over the relationships this week. Obviously, we've, you know, been privy to it in all the media and with what I've seen, but I've also seen it with couples who have different agendas, and each might be in denial of some part of the reality or perceived reality in their preferred way, feel entitled to their reality, manipulate to get what they want, threaten to give a consequence if they don't get their way, and then attack to get their way, and ultimately justify their actions and positions. I've also seen the same dynamic between family members and a mother with their kids, or a father with their kids, or two brothers, or two sons, or two sisters together. I've also been a witness to similar dynamics between business partners this week. This dynamic usually happens when we lose trust regarding the other person's intention, the spirit of team building, friendship, the benefit of all kind of attitude, and the sense of loss over the outcome of the negotiation that we wanted and it was on our side. This dynamic usually ends relationships, partnerships, and marriages. Since the path is only to win, regardless of the consequences. I've seen this dynamic many times in divorces and in dissolving businesses, partnerships, which leave nasty residual feelings for everyone in the process, and actually everyone who was even watching the process. You know, like if you know somebody who's getting a divorce and you're their friends or their neighbor, and after looking at all of that, you know, it leaves the nasties in your mouth, kind of like, ugh, that's exactly what happens. And this is exactly what almost everybody's experiencing now today with all that's happening. Does it need to get there? Nope. Especially if there is an intention to keep relationships, like such as marriages, families, family relationships, communities. What does it take for us not to allow destruction and only allow constructive negotiations to occur? For us to keep the bigger picture in sight that would benefit all in the long term, in the long haul, and not just self-interest, short-term gain maybe. It does take a mature and an emotionally and cognitively healthy people to be able to negotiate fairly and amicably. So what does it take to be emotionally and cognitively healthy? To be able to be in control of your thoughts, feelings, and behaviors? Able to handle life challenges? Doing a reality check and bouncing back from failures or setbacks, which happens for all of us. Having high self-esteem and have values that are aligned with compassion toward others with no intention to harm other people. The ability to clearly think, see reality as it is, presented and agreed upon by others around. Learn from mistakes, take responsibility and accountability for their own action, and feel remorse for negative impact on others, and have the skill to clear, clean, and reconnect to others. So, what about you? Let's observe you. Observe yourself. In what areas of life and in which relationships do you see yourself being emotionally healthy? And in which scenarios or relationships you lose your emotional stability? In what circumstances do you find yourself in denial and refuse to see what others tell you? Under what conditions you lose cooperativeness and will do anything to win, even though it is to your detriment? And how do you restore yourself and the damaged relationships? To be emotionally and cognitively healthy, it is important to be aware and then regulate our perception, emotion, and action toward an intended result that is beneficial to all who are part of the relationship, family, community, and the world. So for gaining skills in how to become emotionally and cognitively healthy, see my book, Life Reset, The Awareness Integration Path to Creating the Life That You Want. We'll be right back.
Join the conversation every Monday afternoon at 3 p.m. Pacific for Inner Voice Heartfelt Chat with Dr. Fujian. Dr. Fujian is a radio and TV host, international speaker, psychotherapist, life coach, and the author of Life Reset, The Awareness Path to Create the Life You Want. She brings you the latest research and interviews with experts in the field of cognitive sciences. Anyone who loves to grow and create growth for humanity gets a voice on this call-in show. Inner Voice Heartfelt Chat with Dr. Fujian. Monday afternoons at 3 p.m. Pacific on Smart Talk KMET 1490 AM and on KMET1490AM.com.
So, this is the Ask Me segment. There was a question, and it's like, what do I do with my anxiety in this era of unknown? And what is it that I can do as my anxiety starts showing up? Well, there's two phases to anxiety. One is what happens in your physical body, and one happens in your thought. So your thought produces the emotion and the feeling of anxiety. You feel it in your body, and it gets you really upset. So what happens in your body is your body goes through fight or flight or freeze mode. And you'll have heart palpitation. You'll have kind of like a dizziness. You might sweat under your arms or your hands. And a lot of times that your muscles might get really tight. You might get a stomach ache, or your pain might be in different parts of your body. What you want to do with that is release it immediately. And you could do deep breathing, long exhales, start singing the songs that you like, walking, stomping, jumping, running. Just don't sit down with anxiety. Anxiety is one of those emotions that you got to move constantly. And that's to release in the let it go, letting go of what happens in your body and all the chemicals that are pouring it. Cognitively, what happens is you're looking at the future and you're projecting something very negative. So something that it hasn't happened, and we don't even know whether it would happen or not. So the first thing is to do is reality check. Is it happening now? Nope. If it's happening now and you need to do something about it, please do. If not, if it's in the future, look at the probability of it happening based on what's going on, you know, today in the present moment. And is there anything you could do about it right now? Or is it more like you have to wait? Because if you have some certain skills, it's going to carry you until then. So whether you think about it now or whether you think about it then, if it happens, it's still the same type of skills. If you need to prepare something for that, okay, then go ahead and prepare. I'll make your anxiety a little bit less. But if you assess that you have no idea if it's going to happen or not, it's not really a part of reality, then you'll let yourself know that I'm just going to come back to the present moment, enjoy what I have, and kind of go into a gratefulness of what's going on here. And don't worry about the tomorrow. We'll cross that bridge when we get there. Some people go through like the worst case scenario and look at the worst case scenarios and say, hey, if this happens, then I'm going to do that. Some people go to the worst case scenario and kind of like stand right behind the solution. So my point is, if you're going to use the worst case scenario in the future, you got to go all the way to completing the solution. That if it happened, these are the things I'm going to do, and I'm going to bring myself to clarity, safety, you know, protecting myself, everything that I got to do. So come back to the present moment, look at what you have, start gaining, feeling great and gratitude about your safety today. Look at all the resources that you have today and calm down your anxiety in that way. All right. I have the latest research for you also. Neuroscientists show that the entire auditory pathway represents sounds according to prior expectations. Humans depend on their senses to perceive the world, themselves, and each other. Despite senses being the only window to the outside world, people do rarely question how faithfully they represent the external physical reality. We don't that much. During the last 20 years, neuroscience research has revealed that the cerebral cortex constantly generates predictions on what will happen next, and that neurons in charge of sensory processing only encode the difference between our predictions and the actual reality. A team of neuroscientists in Technische Universität Dresden presented new findings that show that not only the cerebral cortex, but the entire auditory pathway represents sounds according to prior expectation. We only hear what we want. We only hear what we expect. Yep, you could really see that, can't you? Neuroscientists have proven it. These results can be best interpreted in the context of predictive coding, a general theory of sensory processing that describes perception as a process of hypothesis testing. Predictive coding assumes that the brain is constantly generating predictions, yep, about how the physical world will look like, sound like, feel like, and smell like in the next instant, and that neurons in charge of processing our senses have resourced by representing only the differences between these predictions that we have and the actual physical world. Researchers stated that subjective beliefs on the physical world have a decisive role on how we perceive reality. Decades of research in neuroscience has already shown that the cerebral cortex, the part of the brain that is most developed in humans and apes, scans the sensory world by testing these beliefs against the actual sensory information. We have now shown that this process also dominates the most primitive and evolutionary conserved parts of the brain. All that we perceive might be deeply contaminated by our subjective beliefs in the physical world. Given the importance that predictions have only on daily life impairments on how expectations are transmitted to the subcortical pathway, could have profound repercussions in cognition and developmental dyslexia. The most widespread learning disorder has already been linked to altered responses in subcortical auditory pathway and to difficulties on exploiting stimulus regulatories in auditory perception. The new results could provide the unified explanation of why individuals with dyslexia have difficulty in the perception of speech and provide clinical neuroscientists with a new set of hypotheses on the origin of other neural disorders related to sensory processing. So we hear only what we want to hear, and what we only hear what we could predict to hear. So we keep going back and proving to ourselves whatever we want to prove, right? And again, we could see that all along, but more than anything, we experience this constantly in relational aspects, especially in marriages. So don't go anywhere. We have Dr. Robert Johansson here. We're going to talk about couples and couples communication and how to handle their needs.
Have you ever wished you could just wake up one day, reach across your nightstand, and hit the life reset button? Let's face it, the struggles and frustrations of everyday life leave millions of women and men around the globe yearning for a new way. And the new way is right here in Life Reset, the awareness integration path to create the life you want by Dr. Fujian Zane. You can get it now at fujian.com or amazon.com. Life Reset, the awareness integration path to create the life you want. You deserve it.
Take KMET 1490 AM with you everywhere you go by downloading our free smartphone apps found on the KMET website, KMET1490AM.com. You can also go to the Google Play Store or the Apple App Store on your phone to download the free app. Now you can listen live or play any of your favorite programmers' podcasts using your smartphone. Go to KMET1490AM.com and download your free phone app today.
Join the conversation every Monday afternoon at 3 p.m. Pacific for Inner Voice Heartfelt Chat with Dr. Fujian. Dr. Fujian is a radio and TV host, international speaker, psychotherapist, life coach, and the author of Life Reset, The Awareness Path to Create the Life You Want. She brings you the latest research and interviews with experts in the field of cognitive sciences. Anyone who loves to grow and create growth for humanity gets a voice on this call-in show. Inner Voice Heartfelt Chat with Dr. Fujian. Monday afternoons at 3 p.m. Pacific on Smart Talk KMET 1490 AM and on KMET1490AM.com.
Hello, listeners. This is Christopher from The Christopher Show. Hey, if you miss one of our shows here at KMET, don't worry about it. You can go to our webpage, and that's KMET1490AM.com. Go to the homepage, click on the SoundCloud tab, and hear any show anytime you want.
The Christopher Show takes over KMET Saturdays from noon till 1. Tune in for a brash, honest talk that takes you to a new level. The Christopher Show will wake you up and open your eyes to what's really going on in the Inland Empire and beyond. That's The Christopher Show Saturdays from noon till 1 p.m. Check out The Christopher Show at Facebook and leave your comments.
Applebee's in Beaumont is where you can order delivery online at applebees.com, or you can pick up your food carside by ordering online and by phone. Enjoy Applebee's bold, savory grilled steaks, salmon, or chicken meals. Applebee's is located where Beaumont meets Banning, just off 6th Street near Highland Springs Avenue. Applebee's in Beaumont, offering carside to go or delivery when you order online. Go to applebees.com. That's Applebee's in Beaumont at applebees.com. Make it Applebee's tonight.
Well, welcome back, everyone. I'm Dr. Fujian Zane, and I'm excited to have Dr. Robert Johansson with me. He has been in private practice for approximately 40 years. He's the co-founder of a large group practice, Cerritos Psychological Center. Before entering private practice exclusively, Dr. Johansson taught a range of psychology courses at several Southern California colleges and universities, including UCLA, and he continues to lecture at various seminars, conferences, and workshops, trainings, professionals, and with students. He is a psychotherapist. And in collaboration with Dr. Todd Gaffney, Dr. Johansson developed a couple treatment model, and it will be featured in their new book, Need Management Therapy, A New Science of Love, Intimacy, and Relationships. Welcome to the show.
Thank you, Dr. Zane. Thank you very much. Nice to be here. Nice to be back. Thank you for having me back.
Yes, you were presenting your first book when you came to my show the first time, which was Lovemaking. And you actually did have the need management perspective in that book for everyone to kind of go through and do the exercises and really bring it into their relationship. And your latest book is really bringing it into the techniques and every aspect of it for people and clinicians to really really learn the key factors of this theory that you brought in. Can you share a little bit about how you came up with the theory of need management?
Oh, that's a difficult, good question, but a difficult one. By the way, you summarized that very well. Thank you. Thank you for that nice introduction to the book. The book evolved over a long period of time. It actually had its beginnings in our confusion, our difficulty in treating couples who would often present for therapy right on the precipice of separation and divorce. So we were rummaging through the literature, trying and consulting with each other in a panic, almost a panic-like way, because we had a high premature termination rate. So we would look through, see what our colleagues were doing, see what the seasoned thinkers were doing in the area, and we didn't find a lot of real concrete procedures or methodologies that could be quickly imposed on the conundrum of couple data. As you know, it can be very, very complicated. People come to therapy with the emotionally charged feelings of confusion, depression, sadness, hurt, fear, a variety of emotions, and it really makes for difficult treatment. So we thought we need to form a treatment model that can quickly impose an organizing perspective over this complex data and bring quick and hopefully complete help to a couple that is, again, right on the precipice of divorce or separation.
When you working with therapists, working with couples for about 40 years, and I've worked with the couples also for about 30 years, there is a way that we could see that the relationship is not going to work. If there's a behavior, there's a way of being, there's a way of perceiving the other person. There's a way of maybe the person even perceiving themselves into the relationship, that you can really see that they're struggling being together. Like they're trying to hold on to something, but they're really struggling. Can you share what have you experienced that makes couplehood fail?
You know, continue your point there. What you said, I find to be absolutely consistent with my actual clinical practice with couples. Each one brings a perception or a fundamental set of needs to one another. And one of the unique features of our model is this assumption that couples bring to one another essentially fundamentally legitimate needs at their most irreducible basic level. For example, the need for understanding, sensitivity, respect. Those are fundamentally, inarguably legitimate needs or valid needs. The problem the couples have is that they mismanage those and their relationship gets cluttered with confusion and hurt and twisted couples become unable to untangle themselves. So again, the model strives to impose an organizing perspective over this complexity of data so that couples can find their way out.
You chose to call your theory need management. So there's an assumption, like you said, that each person has a particular need. And then the name supposes that there has to be managed and the person themselves would be responsible to managing, first identifying what their needs are and then managing their needs and then maybe communicating with their partner what those needs are and how to be taken care of, let's say. So when you talk about needs, can you distinguish between what would be an innate concept of, and you said a couple of them, but what would be the distinction between the need or a desire or a wishful fantasy that people usually have that I wish that person would be, you know, my mother, but the better version of it, or my father, better version of it. So can you distinguish a little bit between these concepts?
You know, we're in a theoretical area here. Concepts of the self, ultimately, in their most thought out, most basic sense, are philosophical ideas. So we make, as you said, use the word there, assumption. And that's exactly what we did. We made this assumption that the self is comprised of needs. And we stretch the term need to include, you know, preferences, where we're going to eat on Saturday night, Chinese or Mexican, to the more profound needs, these ones I talked about, to be loved, to be cared for, to be unconditionally regarded, to be sensitively and respectfully understood. And that subsumes a number of things like when we're gonna have sex and how we're gonna have sex, right? And how we're gonna raise the children and what we're gonna do with the money. These reflect profound needs, and couples bring differences, inevitably, they bring individual differences, and those must be wrestled through. And a place must be found in the context of the relationship for these disparate needs. And that's not an easy thing. We argue, and we believe fairly convincingly, that there's no other relationship that's any more complicated, any more difficult to navigate than the intimate one. And the reason for that is that it promises so much fulfillment. So to go back to the earlier point, I bring to my wife a collection. I'm a composite of needs interacting all the time, some bubbling up to the top of my awareness and I'm acting from them, some more basic that require deeper provocations that come out in various interpersonal scenarios. But I bring this composite of needs to my wife. Now, how I manage those needs, NMT argues, need management therapy argues, is crucial to the health of the relationship.
So when we talk about, let's give an example of what is one person's need that, you know, usually it's out there for everyone, such as respect, such as, you know, creative compassion and love, such as understanding. And then what would be the type of a management from your perspective that one needs to create for that need?
Yes. Well, you started earlier with that. You're showing some understanding of the model. Thank you for that, Pujan. First, before a need can be actively, effectively managed, and remember, at their most fundamental, irreducible level, all needs are legitimate. Therefore, they beg for active management. So if I have a need, let's say for Chinese food, to share an experience with Chinese food this Saturday night with my wife, there is that immediate need for the Chinese food, that preference. But at a deeper level is the need to have my wife's respect for the fact that I have this preference. And that if I manage it effectively, I can actually grow my esteem for myself vis-a-vis or in relation to my partner. Now, this does not imply that my need invariably must be gratified, not at all. But it does mean that I identify the need. That's the first step in managing it, recognizing that at its fundamental level, there's nothing wrong with my need. There's nothing wrong for me to have a preference for Chinese food on a Saturday night, right? So that second step is recognizing that legitimacy, which again begs for an active management. And then the active management or representation of that need includes three steps. And maybe as our interview unfolds, I can break those down further. But the first step balances self in other respects. If I would like you, my wife, to understand how important it is for me to have Chinese food this Saturday night, I want to go out of my way to invest some respect in her. That way I gain her audience. For example, it's a simple courtesy. It's so simple that it's as plain as a nose on our faces. Do you have a moment we can talk? I was thinking about some things that I'd like to share with you. And if I could get a moment, I'd like to express a need of mine, a preference of mine. When I make that initial investiture of partner respect, I literally elevate the probability that I will be respected for my preference to have Chinese food on Saturday night. That's the first step. There's a simple analogy. If I go down to the corner bank and say, I'd like $100, the people at the bank are going to say, well, Robert, do you have $100? You have an account here. They're not going to give me $100 if I haven't first invested in it. Simple analogy, but it makes the point that I elevate the probability of getting my wife's respectful, sensitive understanding if I first make an investment in her by asking for a moment of her time or recognizing her ongoing expectational agenda in the moment I approach her. Then I recognize these are intrapsychic or within my head kind of processes, where I recognize there's nothing wrong with me wanting to share an activity of Chinese food on a Saturday night with her.
One of the things that gets, I think, difficult for people is when we call it a need, it becomes an assumption in it that if it's a need, then therefore definitely it has to be fulfilled because it's a need. It's not just a desire.
Yes.
And part of what I'm hearing from you is also that, well, I mean, if you're putting the respect out there, you got to realize that yes, you do have the right to want it, need it, share it, and still have the respect to say that it's because it's only mine that I might also get a no. So then there's also this respect of the other human being. Where although this is that we're separate human beings, and although I might have a particular need and I'm going to share it with you, that you might have an opposing need or just a different type of an opinion. And then, you know, to tell, say no to me. I think there's the difference that I hear is the word, the respect, which some people think when we talk about respect is a respectful way of saying it. But there's much more into the word respect, which is really giving you the authenticity and the autonomy that you get to be you and I get to be me. Yes. And then somewhere in the middle, we got to meet. And in order to share all of these needs and then ask for each other and go back and forth and be able to fulfill each other's need. First, fulfill my need by creating the communication. Second, attempting to fulfill each other's need.
Yes, I agree. That's the typical way we think about a need. A need begs for gratification. Now, here's the stumbling part. This is the challenge in the NMT model. But I as a clinical practicing psychologist with couples, it works when people can adhere to this very difficult challenge. As important as needs are, I just argued or tried to make an argument for the fact that in the fundamental sense, our needs are legitimate. Therefore, why not? Why shouldn't they be gratified? And especially by someone who claims to love me. Now, the NMT model argues that those needs are fundamental. And as you just pointed out, there should be place made within the context, the rigorous context of intimacy, for disparate individual needs, because that's what contributes to the quality of the intimate relationship. However, those needs create fiction. Or friction. Maybe fiction too. Maybe both, yeah. So the NMT model argues this, and this is a stumbling block for me and my marriage of 40 years. And it's a stumbling block, but the right kind of stumbling block. There ought to be a certain kind of tension. Anytime there's growth and development, there is an attending frustration. We will not grow without it. Remember all the frustration you and I felt getting through the PhD program in psychology. Frustrations are a part of growth. So here's a tenet, a fundamental tenet of the NMT model. The management of the need is more important and more crucial to our emotional maturation than the actual gratification of the need, as legitimate as the need may be. Now, we're all in favor of need gratification. However, that carries with it certain disillusionment. Imagine if every need of yours were to be gratified the instant it was aroused.
That would be really good.
That's what I hear every time I bring that point up. Boy, that would be great. If only she would gratify my needs. But consider this, that's infantile, isn't it? It's like being back in the womb, where we don't have to say anything or negotiate for anything. And mom is there. It's satisfied even before we're birthed.
Right? Yes, we all want right? that. Yes.
Right. That wouldn't that be swell? But if you consider this at a deep level, if every one of my needs were gratified the moment it got aroused, wouldn't life be swell? But not really. People who have instant need gratification often flounder. So again, as much as we are all in favor of need gratification, what we're arguing and what we see as a result of our clinical efforts with couples who are struggling to mend their relationships and improve them is in the management of the need lies the greatest maturational growth and development.
Well, there's also this part, which I do think it takes a lot of maturity. Like you said, not being from an infantile place, which, for example, give you an example. It's been 10 months of kind of like not socializing and just being home, working from home and doing that. And The numbers in California of the COVID infections and death have been rising. So part of our conversation with my husband is constantly about him still wanting, no, until, you know, most everybody's got vaccinated and all of that, we're gonna not have anybody still, even in community, small community, even our friends, we don't want to see them. Let's still just do this type of, you know, online work. And there's a part of me that I'm like, but I'm tired and I just want this. And I want to meet my friend outside, and we've got a beautiful backyard. And he's like, well, I don't know, because we're still going to eat and we're going to take the mask off. And it's interesting about, you know, two different needs, which they're both valid. They're both very valid. I'm sure many people who are listening and viewing us, they really experience this also.
Absolutely.
And I hear it from a lot of the couples and that come in, and that this is part of their, you know, conversation constantly of how to be safe and then how to still be some normalcy into it. But then the other part of it is that, if I insist on only fulfilling my need and the price of you not fulfilling yours, well, I also have to pay a high price, that although it appears that this time mine is getting fulfilled, but there's a huge price that I have to pay because you're unhappy with me and you're going to be afraid. So if I say, no, I want my needs to be met and I'm really requesting for you to do it, but then throughout the time that I have people here and we're eating and we're preparing and all of that, that you're fully miserable because I didn't consider that, you know, and thank you for giving it to me, but you know, you got a 24 hour of misery plus 2 weeks of fear of whether you got COVID or not. I don't know if I would really be satisfied with that either. So
you just made my point better than I could. Thank you very much. I like that thinking. I respect it. It's an integral part of the model, the third step of the model. It's the representation of the need. Yes, you and your husband, here's a critical point, each bring to the other a perfectly valid need. If you're the one that wants to, you're the one that's cabin fevered, for example, with COVID restrictions, confinements, your need to be out into the in the world and doing things as usual, business as usual, it's so perfectly understandable and valid. And so is your husband's need, let's say, for safety and to protect his safety and yours. Those needs are fundamentally valid. And herein lies the conundrum, the problem, and the challenge inherent to intimate relationships. You could not, here's a very important tenet, an article of faith, as it were, in NMT. An argument between spouses could not be possible were it not for the fact that each spouse brings to the other a fundamentally legitimate need. The relationship is not embroiled, troubled, because the partners are bringing to one another illegitimate needs. No, they are bringing fundamentally legitimate needs. Otherwise, how could they argue? How could you pitch an argument based on an invalid need? You and your partner have valid needs. It's how you manage those needs that's crucial. How you can make place for these very differing needs within the same marital nest, so to speak. That's the challenge. And as you were pointing out earlier, that if you were to get your need gratified and done so simply because it's aroused, and that need, especially as it continues to be gratified, loses its value. Even though we want to think, no, how could that possibly be? My needs are valid and they should be gratified. But again, it's in the management of the need and not its gratification that we grow ourselves.
So share more about what you mean by management, because most people's thought process is management of my need means I tell you and you give it to me. That's simple. It's clear. What's the issue? So tell us what you mean by management.
Okay. All right. Good. Need management therapy, and the management of the need consists of three basic steps. So the last step contains some challenges, the ones we just covered. But it goes like this, very simply. First step, I must identify my need. When I identify my need, I bring together my sense of self in the difficult context of intimacy. Intimacy is a wonderful place to exist. We all want stable, satisfying, enriching relationships. It confers enormous benefits of security, a sense of self, a sense of belonging. However, the intimate relationship can be notorious for how it strips us of our identity. We forfeit our needs in order to come into compliance with the other because we don't want to rock the boat, right? But in doing that, we can literally deconstruct the self over time. And we wonder, why did I tell all these very positive stories about my partner at the beginning of our relationship, and now I'm telling all these negative stories, and I'm bringing myself to the brink of separation and divorce, or if I stay in my relationship, I don't have the same passion I once did. Well, the explanation for that is a slow progression of poor need management, which means the slow forfeiture decrementally by small pieces over the course of our relationship. We lose our sense of who we are. So need management therapy emphasizes the value of identifying our needs because literally a self gets constructed. I was longer winded than I wanted to be with that. First step is need identification. Second, need legitimization. When I recognize that my identified needs have at their very core their most irreducible level, they are fundamentally legitimate. They funnel down to basic things like, I want to be respected, I want to be understood in a sensitive way. That's part of being in love with somebody and preserving love, to provide those fundamentally legitimate needs. So also the second step, first step, identification of my needs constructs itself. Second step, it recognizes the fundamental legitimacy of my needs, and therefore they beg for active management. If I bring to you, my wife, a fundamentally legitimate need, but I fail to actively manage it, I become someone in relation to you that I don't like. As a consequence, I don't like you in the same way. I lose my affection both for my first for myself and then for you. So that's the second step. Third step, here's where it gets a little more complicated. Third step is the representation of the need, the first step of which is to balance self in other respect. That is, when I go to represent my need with you, I need to show you an initial investiture of respect so that I can get your full audience to the legitimacy of my need. So first step is balancing self in other respect. I literally credit myself to be heard when I've acknowledged you in a respectful way. Do you have a moment? Simple. It's a simple courtesy, and yet it's crucial to good NMT management. Next step, I express, here's one I really like, I want to share with your audience. The second step under need representation is I express my need to you, my wife, and the feelings in orbit about that need, which is the most important part of the communication, that feeling component. When I get your understanding, I feel your care and respect. I feel close to you. I not only feel respect for myself, but I feel your respect rebounding back onto me. So I express my need and the deepest feelings associated with it. Now, when I make that intimate connection or integration within myself, I elevate the probability of making a better connection with you, my wife. I will be no more intimate with you, my wife, than I am first intimate with myself, so to speak. Funny expression, but the point is made that I have to reach deep within myself, find the deepest feelings associated with my need, and express it. Then the last step, and I'll try and be quick with this, is I prioritize the management of those needs over their gratification, because it's in the management of those needs that I fulfill my highest needs as an individual, to be in a stable, satisfying, close relationship. There's no economy of time and or energy on this. It takes effort, and this is why. The fulfillments of intimacy are immense, but they won't be easily had We believe strongly, and we have clinical, we've done two studies, and we found some very positive, encouraging findings. And we have our own clinical experience that verifies this fact, that as people stay close to the orthodoxy, the steps of this model, they grow themselves. And it's first evident in the reduction in argumentation. Mm-hmm. Even couples who can't implement all of the steps of the model come back in at their second, third, or fourth session saying things like, hey, our communications are a little better now. We're not fighting as much. Our solutions seem to take on a greater complexity and quality. And I feel close. I feel closer to my partner.
There's a duality presenting here, which is when I say that my need is legitimate, then the expectation for it to be fulfilled goes sky high.
Yeah.
Just because,
that's right.
You know what I'm saying? Like if I consider my need not legitimate, then I question myself and I won't take care of myself. And then obviously I will be sad, and then it would show up and I would be angered and sad and not fulfilled. And then I would probably hold my my mate as the, you know, obvious, the obvious causality of my issues.
Right.
However, the other side of the duality is that if I see it as legitimate, which it is, there's no question into it that it is. If it's arising from you, then obviously it is legitimate. But then also to present it to my mate as this is legitimate, and my mate respecting me, because it's a, you know, to both as a given receiving concept, my mate also respecting me and really holding my my need as a legitimate, so far so good. Now therefore I expect it to happen. And then when it doesn't, because obviously my mate might have an opposing opposing view that they're just not interested at that moment or for whatever reason to fulfill it, how would I manage my need when it's not going to be fulfilled?
By realizing, and this takes a lot of discipline and a lot of work, by realizing that it's in the management of my need and not its gratification that I grow myself and I grow closer to my partner.
What is the management piece? How do I manage it? And so I get it that I got to realize it, that it's in my management. Now, how do I manage it?
Identification, legitimization, and active representation of the need. And you hit on the pitfall. This is the real pitfall in our intimate relationships is, Our needs are, in their most fundamental aspect, irreducible level, legitimate.
So part of what I'm understanding is also that I might actually have to grow up and think that everything that I want right now, well, I won't get it, and I can pout as much as I like, but then I got to get over it and move on. Is that what I'm hearing?
Right.
That would part of be by management of it by growing.
Because here's what I'm thinking, Dr. Zaid. The respect from my partner, the respectful, sensitive understanding of my partner, which I make possible by the effective management of my need, is more fulfilling under many instances than the actual gratification of the need. If you're my wife and I say to you, I would really like to have Chinese food this Saturday night. I've learned about this new restaurant. People are praising it. And I want to share that experience with you, and you say, oh no, I just heard about they just opened a new Iranian restaurant down the street and I want to go there. Everybody's raving about it. Can we please go there? Now what do you do? Each one has a legitimate need. So when I respect your need for a different restaurant, then I elevate the probability that I will be respected for the restaurant of my choosing and the fact that I want to share this experience with you.
So you scratch my back, I'll scratch yours.
Quid pro quo. It's as easy as that. When I show you respect for the fact that you want a particular type of Iranian food, let's say, I picked that purposely. You know that, right?
And they are good. I'm just saying, they are good.
I'm sure they are. I love it. I love Mid-Eastern food. So yogurt and all that, and lamb and all that stuff. I love it. So if when I show that respect for you as part of managing the legitimacy of my own need for Asian food, then now we're setting the table for a compromise. Okay, pretty soon we're saying things like, all right, I can see that you really would like to have some Iranian food. So why don't we do that this Saturday night? And then the very next day we can try out the Chinese restaurant. Now, if I go at loggerhorns with you, loggerheads with you, and I say, wait a minute, no. I told you on Tuesday I wanted to go to this Chinese restaurant. I really want to go there. I want you to go with me. Well, when I do that, now I'm setting the stage for a different kind of problem. I'm not investing enough respect in your preference. Why would I expect you then to invest respect in my preference for Chinese food? So again, it's in the management of the need that we achieve our highest, most important values. If you ask people, what do they value the most? This is axiology, comes from philosophy. What do you value the most? Invariably and without hesitation, people say they're intimate relationships, but few of us know how to make those relationships better. And NMT proposes that answer, that axiological or philosophical question. This is how we can grow affection for ourselves in relation to our spouse. When I add to my self-esteem through good need management, I'm growing a commensurate respect in you for me.
Got it. In 1 minute, if you can share with us something that we haven't touched upon and you really want everyone to know.
Oh, well, I think I actually have touched upon it. Maybe if I touch upon it in a slightly different way, using an example, maybe. Let's say I want to make love tonight with my wife. I want to make sure that I go out of my way to respect her needs at the moment, not just my own. When I do that well, and I get her understanding for how I would like to be close to her, share some physical intimacy with her. When I show respect for her, I've elevated the probability that she will respect the legitimacy of my need for that physical intimacy. It's in the management of it. And ironically, here's the point maybe that I haven't elaborated on that I would like to end with. Sometimes just getting our partner's respectful, sensitive understanding of the validity of our needs far outweighs the gratification of those needs. Mm-hmm. Hard lesson to learn, but it's worth it.
What it brings this sentence to mind that, you know, there's a reason which is called the give and receive. Your model says begin giving and therefore you will receive. But the concept of it is like, imagine having the respect, imagine to come from a place of giving to your partner. And that becomes your savings account that you can draw on when your needs are out there to be managed.
Right. If I could, I understand that premise. Give to partner and your position to receive. What the model advocates is giving to self and other simultaneously. That's an act of intimacy intelligence. We have developed this idea. It comes from emotional intelligence. Intimacy intelligence is encompasses what we've been talking about. Good need management can be defined as intimacy intelligence. I get by giving to myself in the right way, I actually grow my affection for who I am in relation to you. Right. Therefore, I love you. It's a way I can build my esteem, not just for myself, but for you as well through good need management.
Thank you. Dr. Robert Johansson, Need Management Therapy, A New Science of Love, Intimacy, and Relationships. Thank you so much for being on our show.
You're very welcome. Thank you for having me.
For everyone out there, create an amazing life for yourself and everyone else. And we'll see you again here next week. Bye-bye.